My name is Sebastian Unruh, and this is Don Matzinger. I'm age 15. She's age 63. Today's date is March 16th, 2018. She's my grandma, and recording this interview in Grants Pass, Oregon. Talk about the first time we met. What went through your mind?
You and me?
Yeah.
We met the first time when you were coming out of your mother's womb. So what was going on in my mind is, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. I got a new grandchild.
Yeah, but like, what was your, when I first came to live with you?
Oh, I was excited.
You were excited?
Oh, way excited.
What was your reaction when you first saw me, though?
First time I saw you?
Yeah. When I was four.
When you came back?
Yeah, when I was four, when I was coming to live with you.
I was excited. I was excited to see you the first time. I was glad that you were safe.
All right. What is something you're passionate about?
Something I'm passionate about?
Yeah.
Healthy nutrition is one of those things.
Health and nutrition?
Yeah.
What about your singing?
Used to be passionate about that.
Used to be passionate about that? Alright. What was your childhood home like? Who else lived in the house with you, and what did your bedroom look like?
Well, my bedroom was probably pretty small, and it had wood floors, and it had turquoise walls with white trim, and a beautiful floral kind of turquoise colors in it with white flowers and stuff, type of a bedspread, and white French provincial, kind of a girl's type of a bedroom furniture.
Like, what type of blankets were on your bed?
I just described that.
Like
flower bedspread.
Oh, okay. Who else lived in your house?
Well, I lived with the last person that I lived with, referring to this room also. And a lot of the time, was my grandparents. I lived in my grandparents' home. This was my dad's home before my grandparents bought this home in California, Sarasota, California. And my grandparents lived there, my father lived there, and I lived there. And before that, it was in Campbell with my stepmother and my father and myself.
Okay. What was your childhood home like? What was like, you know, how people acted in your home? What was it like?
Well, I have good and bad memories.
What's your good memories?
The good memories are at the in the times when my dad was doing a lot of skin diving for abalone and that type of thing, and was friends with our neighbors, and we'd all go to the ocean, and we'd camp on the ocean or camp up in the rapids and stuff, and they go skin diving, and we would, you know, have, you know, all just a wonderful time. Those and times of things like going to the drive-in movies together, those are good times, and barbecues, those are good times. And so I had mixed baggage, but there was a lot of stress in my house. my father was an alcoholic, and my stepmother was under a whole lot of stress. A lot of it having to do with she also was pretty ill and had a lot of allergies, and her immune system was down.
What kind of allergies?
Like smog. We had real bad smog back in that day.
There was a lot of pollution.
Yeah. And it was in the Bay Area.
What time?
Palm Valley.
What time was this? Like 1960s?
Yeah, 1960s.
Okay.
Early 70s.
And then how was your grandma? Like?
My grandmother.
You told me that she was very sweet.
Yeah, she was like my mother, really. She was the mother that I recognized.
She acted like your biological mother, but she really wasn't.
Yeah, she was kind of my mother. She was my mother figure, really.
Just like the same situation that you are to me?
Most likely. Yeah. But she was, you know.
How did she deal with stress of taking care of you?
Pretty much, she went the path of the least amount of resistance, because she had already been through a lot, I think, in her life by the time that I was a teenager and I began to live with her again.
What type of thing? What'd you say?
They'd gone through the depression. They'd gone through a lot of life struggles.
Oh, yeah.
You know? By the time I came...
How did the depression and stuff like that affect her emotionally? Or, like,
well,
did
she
see
never
me?
Said anything. Back in that time period, you didn't show your emotions much. You didn't do things like you might do now. Like, if I'm having things where I'm really having an issue that I'm overcoming, perhaps I might be reading self-help books to help me through it, to tool me to through it or something. Or I might go to counseling or something like that. But back in those days, they didn't have that going on so much.
They didn't have
very elite might go to a psychiatrist or something. But most farm folk, which she grew up being, and most people, you just didn't take your dirty laundry out of your, you know, out of your household. You just kept it there and stewed in it.
So where was your grandma born and raised?
In Ohio. Burbank, Ohio is where she was raised.
Burbank, Ohio.
Yeah, pretty sure she was born there.
Did she ever tell you about the stories about Ohio?
No, I know that she was born... I think she had... What was it? She had several siblings, and I know that she grew up on a farm. So that had to meant that they all probably worked pretty good, pretty hard, you know.
Did she ever, like...
She grew up in 1913.
Do you think she ever made a living off of her crops and her...
I don't know that they had a commercial kind of a farm or a local farm. I'm not sure what kind of a farm. What's unfortunate, one of the things that I feel that was the most unfortunate thing in my life with her, is that I didn't ask her more questions about how she was raised, what her childhood struggles were, all those things.
Would you say that's your regret?
That is a regret, yeah, it is. I started asking her the last time I ever had a meal that she made me sit down, and I was asking her things about her life. I remember that night, and I wanted to start asking even more.
Mm-hmm.
And only a few days later, she had a stroke. Short time later, she had a stroke, and I could never ask her anything more again.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what little information did she tell you? She told me
that she lived on a farm. She was young. She was 16 when my grandfather had swept her off her feet, I guess. She was just a farm girl. My grandfather was pretty handsome, very independent kind of man, because in his day what happened is after the war, he was older than her.
World War One or Two?
World War One, and so on. I guess what happened is that he was young, 12 years old, his parents died, and he ended up having to raise the rest of his siblings at 12 years old. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And had to go out and try and make a living to try to support the rest of his siblings.
Now, what jobs did he have at 12?
He was an excellent, I don't know, but I do know this. He's had restaurants. He was a contractor. He knew how to build homes. He was a really good craftsman.
He was very intelligent when he was...
He was moderately intelligent. I don't know if I would call him intelligent.
I would say, though, that he
was very skilled.
Yeah, skilled.
Yeah. He was kind of ornery by the time I knew him. But it was just because he was a lot older, and again, they'd gone through a whole lot. I certainly didn't understand it back then. I do now that I'm old.
How were you like as a child? What did you look like, and how did you like to spend your time?
Well, I loved to play movie star and singer and entertainer and that kind of stuff.
So you would like sing in your house and stuff? To music that you would hear on the radio?
Yeah, mainly in my room. I had a guitar, so I'd go up there and play. And
almost like Nick does?
Yeah, I'd play guitar and learn guitar. And
you had a two-story house?
I didn't grow up, but I'd go to my room, and I'd play guitar a lot. That's what I did a lot of. I enjoyed also the TV shows back then, which was things like Beverly Hillbillies and Mr. Ed, Talking Horse, and...
Did you ever, like, watch the news?
Not much, until I was a teenager. Well, there were certain key issues in history that I went through.
Like 9/11.
Well, 9/11, that's current for me.
For you, it's current.
Way back would be the Civil Rights Movement.
Oh, yeah.
I went all through that, you know. I remember on the TV, on news, watching the Watts riots of the 60s.
What was that?
That was blacks rioting the street in the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
But this was, I'm trying to remember what that was all about.
And what about that Vietnam War?
And the Vietnam War, I was young when that started too, and at a certain point in my childhood, being a baby boomer.
And how did your parents feel about Reagan or any of the presidents at the time?
Reagan or any of the presidents? Well, at the time when I was a kid, it wasn't Reagan. Reagan came when I was.
Was it Nixon?
No, it was Kennedy.
Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy, and Johnson, and Harold Ford, and Carter.
Did your parents ever show any expression towards the president?
They ate on cereal.
The president of the time. Did your parents ever show any expression towards any of the presidents? Were they Republican or were they a Democrat? What was their political stance? Did you ever know?
I think they liked John F. Kennedy. They had a picture that was framed in the living room of him. So that tells me that they liked him.
Was Kennedy...
They didn't talk a lot politically to me.
Do you know if Kennedy was a Republican or a Democrat?
He was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat?
For sure.
So would you say your parents were mostly a Democrat?
Well, that's what they would tell me. They were Democrats. But see, Democrat was different back then. Democrat has always been the party of the people.
Yeah.
Meaning workers and labor workers and so on.
And everyone coming together.
That kind of thing, community efforts and so on.
Yeah.
Which is always a good thing. But They were also the party that started the KKK and all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then it kind of flipped over to the right wing.
Wait, how were they? How was the KKK back then? Like, what would happen?
Just like what you've seen in movies and stuff.
Were there, like, bombings from them?
Yeah, they bombed in Alabama, and they used to do stuff like that. They lynched.
And how did your parents react?
They lynched blacks and so on.
How?
Well, my dad was a racist. Entirely.
Entirely?
Oh, yeah. Did not like blacks. Always spoke against blacks. Told me I was not allowed to have friends that were black. Told me I was... Sat down, gave me a lecture about how I was never to bring a black friend home. If I have a friend that's black, he better not know about it. I mean, it was that kind of... He had a hatred. And when I'd ask him, where is this hatred coming from? Even he didn't know. He even confessed to me once. I don't know why I feel this way. I just do.
So he really just didn't know why he didn't like.
Just that hate in his heart, I guess. Because, I mean, honestly, when I say hate in his heart, I mean we would be out on the road and he'd be cussing at every driver and he'd be cussing at everything and hating on everything.
So if your dad was like this, what do you think your mom, like, why did your mom get with this guy?
He was movie star handsome, attractive, first of all. And I'm sure he had womanly charm, you know, charm to lure a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he had all those qualities. But, because he really was a very, very handsome man when he was young.
I'm sure appearance is a big factor into... Like picking
when you're young.
Yeah, but
not when you get older and you start getting wiser.
Yeah, but what, like, I guess personality wise, what made your mom pick him? Because, you know,
well,
you always tell me
how fun you're talking about, because my real mom, I didn't know. The second mom or stepmom, I hardly knew, so I don't know what attracted. You know, they were divorced by the time I was 4. And then the last one was, he got with when I was, well, the last one in my childhood, is he got when I was 6, and divorced when I was 15.
So your dad was with, like, 3 different women?
Yeah, he married 5 times.
5 times?
Yeah.
And he divorced, like, 4 times?
4 times, yeah.
So the last one he stayed with?
Yeah, to the end. And the last one was a year younger than me.
That's interesting. What was it? Tell me about your grandparent, like your grandpa. You told me about your grandma, but how was your grandpa?
I told you about my grandpa. I told you that.
Yeah, he had a farm and then.
No.
Oh, no, that was your grandma.
Yeah, was the daughter of several siblings on a farm. My grandpa, remember, was orphaned at about 12 and ended up raising his siblings.
Yeah.
went through the Depression, worked through all that. Was a house builder, remember I told you about.
Yeah.
You know, carpenter.
Did he ever, like, what would he do when was he, like, living with you? With you in your grandma?
Yes.
He was? All right. Share with me the story of how you and grandpa met. Tell me about your wedding and your honeymoon.
My wedding? How we met?
Mm-hmm.
And then the wedding?
Yeah. Hmm. You told me that you guys met like a... Or a friend told you about this guy.
No, what happened is that I was going from work. Company, and it was situated in this kind of court area where there were other little quaint shops.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go get a cup of coffee, and there was this wedding store that was in that courtyard that a friend of mine managed.
Happened to be a wedding store? That's interesting.
Just happened to be a bridal shop that she was managing. And so I went in to say hi to her. And Papa came in to give her back some keys because he was looking at her car. Ends up that she was his best friend's girlfriend. And so she introduced us that day. And she came into my shop later on while I was at work and told me that he wanted to have a date with me. And he called me a few days later, and we went on our first date to lunch. Took me to lunch, and then we went and looked at a motorcycle.
What did you guys eat during that lunch?
Lasagna.
What place was it?
It was at a deli. I forget the name of the deli, but it was at a deli that was downtown there on Pacific Garden Mall.
Hmm. Was it like good pasta?
But it's okay.
It was
no,
okay.
Not the best.
Not the best.
Not the best. But it was okay. But anyway, and then our wedding, I think we decided one day it was the day that we should get married. I think we just decided that.
How many years was it after you guys had first met?
A couple years. Yeah, it was 86 when we met. It was 88.
Would you say that's about the time period when individuals decide when to marry or
not? No, but I would say that's about the time period people should wait until they decide they're going to get married, at least two years. Even if they think that they're in love and they think that they're going to live happily ever after, you get to know a person and feelings go through different things, through different experiences in life, and I think that you really find out more if you let yourself. That's a different subject.
What type of experiences made you end up making the decision to marry him?
I absolutely knew he was my soulmate. When I met him that day in the bridal shop, and after our first date, I think it was the first weekend we decided to be together, and he was in a band at the time. He was playing the Art and Wine Festival down in Capitola, and I was looking at him as he was there on stage, and all of a sudden I realized that he was going to be with me for the rest of my life. I didn't know what that meant at the time, whether it was going to be on a friendship thing level, whether he was going to be my husband or what. But I knew that he was always going to be somebody that was going to be in my life.
That was going to be significant to you?
Yes. And it didn't take too much longer before I started seeing that he was actually the male side of me. It was almost as if his soul had been a part of mine already. It's just that time made it manifest.
So it was almost like a spiritual connection?
Yeah, it was absolutely a spiritual connection. We both knew that.
So.
And I never felt that way with anybody. I mean, I would develop a fondness for people, that
yeah.
kind of thing, and maybe a connection. But I never felt like that person was like the male side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And like he'd always been there all my life. That was the difference.
All right. So you were saying about your wedding?
Oh, the wedding day. We decided to go down to town hall and not make a big hoopla. I was working at a salon and day spa, so the girls helped make me up and put up my hair, you know, do my hair and all that. I put on a dress, a white dress that I had that had kind of a drop skirt, and a really beautiful scarf that was kind of a sash, and we went down to the town hall, and that day, it was June 24th, and here it was, a rainy day in the middle of summer in Santa Cruz, which hardly ever happened, and not only that, it was even some lightning and thunder going on.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so we go down to the courthouse. A friend of mine was a witness in the chamber, the judge's chamber. He married us. And then we went to a place called the Gatsby for happy hour. And it was a very nice high-class lounge that would give you free food.
What type of stuff did you eat during that happy hour?
You know, chicken wings and things like that.
Did you have steak or anything?
No, not at that time. But we had a friend. It's funny. We didn't have a My husband's friend, Jill's friend, Rick Lobick, and his wife decided to take us up to a place called Chaminade, which is it's up above Soquel. At a conference hotel center, it used to be an old convent, not for nuns, for fathers. What do they call those? Not convent. But anyway, it used to be one of those type of places, an old structure that was remodeled beautiful. But anyway, it was going to be the fish buffet
mm-hmm.
that night, seafood buffet, whatever. And they had invited us to go there. So we went up there. You could see the ocean and all the Santa Cruz and SoCal and all that. And complete with the thunder and lightning storm that we were having over the ocean that night.
And it rarely ever happened.
Well, and then so then we went home, and some friends of mine had come into my apartment that night, that day, as we were out, and decorated the entire apartment. With veils and little instructions to kiss here and go kiss there and, you know, that kind of stuff. It was real cute. And somebody had made us a beautiful little carrot cake, three-tiered cake.
It was a carrot cake.
And funny because my very first wedding was a carrot cake, too.
Huh, it's crazy.
Both times was carrot cake. Anyway.
What'd you say you have a...
thing for carrot cake?
Yeah.
Like carrot cake. Anyway, so that was wonderful. And so we stayed right there. That was my apartment in Capitola that night. And then the next day, there was a concert that was in, it was one of the wineries that, where they have an outdoor bistro with, you know, umbrellas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they do little concerts and stuff. And so we went to that the next day, and it was Michael Hedges and Andy Norell that was playing that day. Beautiful, wonderful concert. So that made a wonderful...
what were they playing?
After the wedding day, the latest things that they were playing.
Well, no, what were they playing, like guitar?
Yeah, Michael Hedges is a percussion acoustic guitarist, and
mm-hmm.
he plays those bass harp type of guitars.
Mm-hmm.
He was the father of that type of guitar playing, which is now very popular, gaining a lot of popularity. He was really the father of it. And I got a chance to see him that day. And then Andy Norell plays pan drums, jazz pan drums. Oh, just
amazing.
Amazing. Anyway, so that was the wedding.
All right, so tell me about when you found out you were going to be a mother or a father, a mother. But do you remember the moment you first saw my mother, and how did it make you feel?
Yeah. Well, I've gone through 73 hours of labor.
73 hours?
With her because she was breech. I was living in Eureka, California at the time. The hospital was in Fortuna. We went to the Fortuna Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I had a country bumpkin little doctor who I don't think he somehow recognized that she was breech, that this was her butt and not her head that was ready to give birth. And so he never gave me a C-section or something. That's what they used to do back then if you were breech.
Mm-hmm.
He just went ahead and did it naturally anyway, but she got stuck. So it was kind of a panicky situation. I'm trying to push her
mm-hmm.
at birth, and I have friends at the door that's crying, and I'm wondering why, because she's not getting her breath, and she's not getting, you know, the oxygen that she needed. She could actually be suffocating was the problem. And so then once
friends thought she might die?
Yeah. So once she was born, they were just sucking her out because she had a lot of fluid and stuff from that birth experience after coming out bottom first, breech.
Yeah.
So, and then the first time I looked at her, I thought, oh my word, she looks exactly like Eric, her biological father. But, of course, I fell in love. But, it's, you know, after about a day is when I really had this real bond, and I thought to myself, how can anybody love like this? It just brings out this love that you just, you can't describe. You just give up your life for that love, the love of your child.
All right. What was my mother like when she was growing up? Do you have any favorite stories about her?
You know, I used to think in certain ways. I mean, she's always had the little, kind of the little stubborn streak that she has. But yet, she was also very, she would mind me pretty well. And animals. I'll never forget. I almost thought of her as the St. Francis, you know, in certain ways. Because I have a picture of us being on a mountain hike. We're hiking, doing a 3-day hike.
On what mountain?
Up in Mount Lassen.
Wow.
And at one point, we're stopped, and this little jaybird is sitting on her hand, just lands on her finger, and she's just sitting there talking to the jaybird, and I took a picture of it. And she'd go up to almost any dog, and they would just, I mean, even the ones that were supposed to be real ferocious would just act like, you know.
Just sweet to her.
Yeah, real sweet to her and stuff. So she had this way with
animals,
and she had a real innocence about her. She really did. Growing up as a child, she wasn't exposed to a lot of the stuff that we're exposed to these days. We didn't even watch half the TV that was going on. You know, we would watch more programs like Little House on the Prairie and, you know, that type of stuff. More wholesome kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't real demonstrative. She didn't talk a lot, you know.
She's very quiet.
Kind of. But as she got a little older, she became very bouncy and animated. You know how sometimes she gets goofy?
Yeah.
She was that kind of goofy. She'd be real goofy and real animated in her speaking. Just goofing off, you know.
Yeah.
But she was real, and she was real affectionate until she was about 14. I mean, we used to, a lot of times, if we, like, say, watched a TV program together or whatever, we would pretty much be laying on the couch together. That's how it was.
Hmm.
And I would pretty much have my arms wrapped around her. So, she was, you know, not afraid to be affectionate back in those days.
Yeah.
And, but when she was 14 is when she, you know, became, of course, what happens to every teenager is they start autonomizing.
They start to become rebellious.
Well, they come into their own. And they start making certain decisions about life. They start forming what their world view, pretty much.
And plus, our family has a history of alcoholism. And so she started on that path, too.
Well, that was when she was 14, you know.
She was 14 and tried it?
That's when she tried it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But anyway,
Did she become obsessed, like, right away, or was it, like, a gradual thing?
I don't feel comfortable putting that kind of personal, that kind of stuff on for, I don't know who is listening.
Okay.
So if we can steer into different things, I feel more comfortable with it.
What was the worst thing you remember my mother ever doing when she was a child?
In her teenage years, just staying out all night.
No, like as a child. Not
as a child?
Yeah, as a child.
She never did anything all that bad as a child.
Yeah, but did you ever remember, like, a moment that she did bad?
I just remember there was only one. I remember one time we were in a parking lot. We were in a parking lot. She was about maybe 3 or 4 years older. And it was like a just icy parking lot. It was in the middle of winter, and people were sliding all over the place, and to walk was dangerous, the whole deal, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're about to go into this store, and we're going across the street, or where the park, I mean, across where it's busy, where traffic would be. And she decided to throw a little tantrum, throw herself down. Right then. And, you know, it's real slippery and everything.
Wow.
I mean, you know,
oh, no.
It's the worst, most dangerous thing that could happen at that time, right then.
Yeah.
And I told her to get up. She wouldn't get up. She just thought she was going to just throw her little bit and stay where she was.
Was she, like, crying and stuff?
Yeah, throwing a tantrum. I forget what it was about or anything like that. All I remember is that that's what was happening, but... Anyway, I told her to get up. She wouldn't get up. She just wanted to stay there and throw a tantrum. There's cars coming, sliding, who knows what. And I finally picked her up and swatted her in the pants. And we went into the we went the rest of the way into the store. I remember people yelling abuse and all this because I swatted her in the pants. That's what I remember was the worst as a little child. It was just that situation where it came down to, it was, you know.
How old
dangerous.
Was she, like, 2?
No, she was about 3 or 4, something like that. She was walking and stuff.
Okay.
It was before she started school.
Did she whine a lot as a little baby?
Well, more than any other kid does.
So she whined, like...
Moderately.
Moderately, I guess.
Probably moderately.
How did Grandpa's illness change you? Did Grandpa's illness change you?
I would say yes.
Has it also changed outlook on life?
I would say that I had to surrender a lot of what I wanted to build, what I wanted to be into. Once he was ill, because I had to stay stationary.
Well, you did end up being an esthetician, and then you were...
Oh, well, I was an esthetician before you were sick.
Oh, yeah, and then you ended up being a...
I was still an esthetician.
Yeah.
But here was the deal, is that my plans before I got sick was to go on into being an educator in that field, possibly into spa design and consulting. That's what I wanted to do with it. And I went to every management seminar I could find at the time. I was reading all the management spas, things that I could at the time, the whole deal. And looking into different things, you know, different alternatives. But I had that beautiful job also. I was just looking into future. What do I want to go on to? But I had that beautiful job at the spa, Coeur d'Alene, when he got sick, you know. And so one of the gals who was a friend of mine, and also she was a teacher, consultant, she was an educator, was speaking to me one day, and she was also a spiritual mentor to me, too, in certain ways. But she basically brought me down to reality, which was, Dawn, you have your grandchild,
you have to take care of them.
And you have a sick, and you have your child, and you have your sick husband. you have to stay stationary. You can't just be traveling all over and stuff. It won't work out for your life right now. I mean, as much as talented as you are, maybe commentary, maybe whatever, but this wouldn't be the thing to do right now. And so I took that as, yeah, I could see, well, of course, with all the emergencies that happen, pop and everything, I have to give that up. And I didn't know that it would be a long process at that time of 18 more years. But it is what it is. And so to surrender that was difficult. Some people might say, well, you didn't come into your full potential. But, you know, God had something different for me. I had a different potential.
Your fate was to take care of us and Grandpa?
Correct.
So.
And it ended up, so Grandpa was never a very religious man, but he was spiritual. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, he never really went to church.
Yeah, he wasn't really church going a lot and
yeah.
That kind of thing. But he certainly believed that Jesus is Lord, and he certainly had a spiritual...
Did he ever read the Bible at all?
Yeah, but he wasn't, I don't think he was as Bible reading. He should have been more Bible reading than he was in order to strengthen himself, as far as I was concerned, but hey.
And then Grandpa was very intelligent.
But he was pretty intelligent. But one of the things that he did say at the beginning that would have just floored everybody, because Papa was not this. Papa, before he came into faith, was a pretty big, you know, he was a party guy and real woman's man. I mean, he was so handsome.
Yeah.
Women just would fall over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a musician and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when he came into faith, all of a sudden, you know, and as he came into this, even before he came into the illness, he says, I don't know why, but God keeps saying to take care of the children. That's what I feel God told me to do. Take care of the children. This is before you guys were even born. Take care of the children. That's what he heard. Take care of the children. But that meant he wasn't quite sure. Oh, okay, take care of my son. That's fine. I'll do that. You know, or, you know what I mean? But it ended up, that's exactly what happened. You know, through his illness, of course, he couldn't work.
Yeah.
So he ended up
taking care of us, the children,
and seeing that as, yeah, that was the calling that had come to him. That's what happened.
All right. Do you have any regrets?
Well, I got plenty of regrets.
Like, when it comes to your job and his illness? Was there any opportunities that you missed that you regret not taking?
Well, here's the thing, is that what I feel about life is that we are, we're living an external human experience.
I only have a minute 30.
Okay, but really everything is internal, is an internal lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So the circumstances of our life sometimes are orchestrated a lot by choice, but many times things make bends that we don't see coming. And so you have to learn, because of those realities that come, you have to learn the spiritual lesson that's in that. The more
and how to adjust to it.
And yes. And in your surrender to what is. And so that's how it has been for me.
So you learn to adjust to it?
You just learn to surrender. You learn to surrender, and you learn to do the best with what you have on, what God put in front of you to do.
All right, this is the last question. How would you like to be remembered?
As somebody that didn't give up.
Someone that didn't give up.
Yeah, that kept persevering, no matter what. You know.
And no procrastination. You really have too much.
I don't know if I would say procrastination. Procrastination is something that you wait till the last minute to do.
Yeah.
I can be one of those. I procrastinate.
But you didn't used to be like that. You would just go to work every single day.
Well, no. I mean, my procrastination is more with administrative stuff. I'll wait for the last minute before I have to do all the paperwork. I hate paperwork, but you know, that kind of thing.
All right.